So again, the question I want to deal with is the question of, right, why didn't Yosef write home, right? What was Yosef thinking during this story? How did he perceive what had happened to him? So if you look at the Ramban says, "Vayiskor Yosef et ha-chalamot asher chalam lahem." We're in the middle of the Yosef story when his brothers first come to him. So the pasuk says that Yosef remembered the dreams that he dreamt. So the Ramban says, "V'yida ashen nitkaimu sharei yishtachavu lo lashon Rashi." It doesn't mean that he remembered them, because now, and he quotes Rashi, because now he sees that his brothers are bowing down to him, which is what happened in his dreams. So that's why he specifically remembers his dreams now. The now, l'fi dati shadavar behefech. But I think the opposite is true. Ki omar katuv ki berot Yosef et achav mishtachavim lo zachar kol ha-chalamot asher chalam lahem. Ramban says, I think it's the opposite. Because when the brothers came and bowed to him, he realized, not like Rashi, that his dreams had been fulfilled, but he remembered his dreams and realized they had not yet been fulfilled. Because he remembered that everyone, all his brothers bowed down to him in the dream. Because in the dream he said us, which implies all of the brothers. Upam sheni, in the second dream, yishtachav lo ha-shemesh v'arech v'achadasar kochavim alom ha-sheni. In the second dream, there's also 11 stars. The kevan shalora binyamin imahem chashav zod atachbula sheyalil aleihem. And it was because he didn't see Binyamin, so he knew the dreams had not yet been fulfilled, that he came up with this plan to bring Binyamin down. Kadesh yaviu gam binyamin achav elav l'kayem achalom reisham tchila, to fulfill the dream. And then he says, v'al kein lo ratza la'gid lahem ani Yosef achichem. And this is why he didn't want to tell them yet that he was Yosef. And to say, Maharu v'alu al avi shlach ha'galot kasher asayim ahem b'pam ha'shniya. And that's why he didn't tell them immediately, go bring my father, ki haya aviv b'amiyad b'lo safek. Because he knew his father would come right without a doubt. V'achareshin kayem ha'chalom ha'rishon, yigin lehem l'kayem ha'chalom ha'shni. He waited till after the first dream was fulfilled, and then he sent for his father to fulfill the second dream. And he said, if it weren't for this, meaning that his goal was to have the dreams fulfilled, he would have sinned a great sin. For so long, caused his father to mourn for Yosef and for Shimon, who was, you know, imprisoned in the interim. And even if, right, he wanted to cause his brother's pain, how could he not have mercy on his elderly father? He did everything so that the dreams would be fulfilled. Right, so the Ramban, right, sort of asked this question implicitly and says, right, how could Yosef not write back? And his answer seems to be that he felt that it was his responsibility to ensure that the dreams would be fulfilled. Right, but it's not totally clear that it answers the question, right?
No, I mean, what happened before that? Like, why didn't he? He's already the viceroy,
right.
So them coming is just the trigger. It's not
right, and that's really right, and that's what Rav Yoel Ben Nun picks up, and he says, right, what is that? Right, first of all, right, that doesn't justify not doing before. Right, it sounds like now he remembers his dream, but he wasn't thinking about it for the last few years. And also still, right, how does that answer the question? The Abar Ben Elin too, right, and we'll come back to other parts of the Ramban in a minute. The Abar Ben Elin too, right, asks it even sharper. And he says, Ashela Ravi, the fourth question I have in this story, is Lamait Naker Yosef Lechav, Diber Adam Gasho, right? Why was he so harsh to his brothers? Hallo, Hayoze Avon Plili, this is a crime. Behotono came in of Terkinachash, that he's being vengeful like a snake. Behem Chashvol of Ra'a, Elokim Chashvol Adovan, even though, yes, they thought of it evil, God thought it for good, as he himself says later. And why is he taking revenge 20 years later? And the Mepharshim, the Ramban, says that the reason he did this was so that they would bow down to him, right? They'd fulfill his dream. Right, kol echav ha'yachadasre, all 11 brothers, kamo shechalam ha'chadasre kochavim b'shtachavim li, ve'enu nachon, it can't be right, ki lo hayta kavana b'chalamo sheyishtachavu lo b'kriya b'shtachavu gmura. That wasn't really his dream that they should bow Unless she got barely MO, that he should overpower them. Varaya shehine lo ishtachav lo aviv. The proof was that his father didn't really bow to him. And he said, furthermore, he could have revealed himself and they still would have bowed down to him. He was the viceroy. His dreams could have been fulfilled even if he'd revealed himself to his father. So why didn't he? Right? So the Ramban had suggested it was to fill his dreams, but the Bar Minhag said it doesn't make any sense. He could have fulfilled his dreams anyways. Right? So, you know, we can ask several questions of the Ramban. His dreams could have been fulfilled anyways, even if it were in fact that even if it were in fact true that he needs to fulfill his dreams this way, why is that a justification to cause his father this type of pain? So that's really the starting question of this dispute between Rav Yoel Ben-Nun and Rav Meidan. So Rav Yoel Ben-Nun sets out the following theory. What I want to do is really just trace it through the psukim. So he starts his theory as follows, and he says, right, the key in any book, right, Chumash, like any other book, is to be able to distinguish between what we know and what the characters know. Right? We read it from the narrator, from the narrator's perspective. The people in the story don't know everything we know. So he says, okay, so let's go into Yosef's shoes. Let's try to figure out what did Yosef think was happening, right? If we want to figure out why did Yosef not send a letter to his father when he became viceroy, when he had the power to do it, right, the easiest, the best way to figure out why he didn't do it was by figuring out, well, how did he view the story? Right, we're reading this in a certain light by asking that question. But what did Yosef himself imagine? So if we go to the Yosef story, the beginning, right? So right in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev.
Page number.
So we are in the art scroll. Let's say page 202. Perek Lamed Zayin Pasuk. Let's start at Yud Bet. Okay, so this beginning of the sale story. His brothers went to shepherd the sheep of their father in Shechem. Vayomer Yisrael Yosef. So Yisrael, meaning Yaakov, said to Yosef, "Halo achecha roim b'shchem lechavesh lecha lehem." Vayomer lo hineini. So he said, your brothers are shepherding in Shechem. Go, I'm sending you to them. And he said, hineini, I'm ready to go. So right off the bat, right, if you were Yosef, right, from this point, how are you already feeling in this story? Right, before we even get to anything, right? So his father is sending him to his brothers alone. Now, what do we know about his brothers already? Everyone knows that they don't like him. Now, where are they sending him? Right, where is he sending them? Shechem, which is ominous, right? It's go to the place where your brothers, you know, killed an entire city. Now he responds, hineini. Now hineini comes from where? Right, hineini is always right a word that harkens back to the akedah. Right, it's the resignation of somebody saying, okay, right, something's going to happen, and saying I'm willing to do it anyways. But right off the bat, the story starts off very ominous. Vayomer lo, lech nara et shloma checha ve shloma tzon ve shivin in davar. So go and come back and tell me how your brothers are doing. So he goes. So now it gets worse, right? What does he tell him to do? Go to your brothers and then do what? Report back to me. Right. Now, why do the brothers hate him? Right? Before the dreams, right, we go back to the beginning of Perek Lamed Zayin, right? Vayaveh Yosef et dibatam ra'al avihem. Right, the first thing we know is that because he reports on his brothers, they don't like him. So here is his father sending him to report on his brothers, right, in Shechem, right? It starts off very, very ominous. Now, so he finds a man, and he says, when the guy asks him, so what are you looking for? I'm looking for my brothers. Where are they shepherding? Travel from here. I heard they were going to the city of Dotan. So they see him from far away. And before he even gets there, they start planning to kill him. And they say to each other, this dreamer comes. So let's kill him. Throw him into a pit. We'll throw him in. We'll say that he was devoured by an animal. We'll see what happens to his dreams. Reuven says, no, don't do that. Right, don't kill him. Reuven, throw him into the pit. Don't kill him. So that, because his plan was to come back and save him. And when he got to his brothers, Yosef et kutanto, so they strip him of his coat, right, the special coat that was on him. Throw him into a pit. They sit to eat bread. So now they see these Yishmaelim, these merchants, right? So then in Chavav, so Yehuda says, we shouldn't kill him, let's sell him instead. And then there are more merchants who come. So in Chavchet, just skipping down a little bit, by Yaluit Yosef min Abor, so they took him out of the pit. By him Keruit Yosef Yishmaelim, they sell him to the Yishmaelim, Besrim Kasef, for 20 pieces of silver. Yehuda Yosef Mitzrayimah. And then Vayeshev Reuven Abor, Vine Yosef Abor, Vekrad Begadav. So Reuven comes back and he's not there. Vayeshev Alachav, Vayomar Ayelad Einenu, the lad is not here. Vani Ana Aniba, so what will I do? Vayechu et Gadon Yosef, Vayeshchatu, Siri Zim, Vayetbelu et Akadon et Badam. So they take his coat and they kill a goat and they dip the coat in blood. Vayeshlachu et Gadon et Badam, Vayevu Alavayem, they bring it to their father, Vayomru, and they say, thanks. And they say, we found this. Haker nach donen bin chayim lo. Recognize, is this the coat of your son? Yakirai, recognize it. Vayomrek donet bini. It is. Chayarad achalatu. He was devoured by a wild animal. Tarof taraf Yosef. Vaykrai Yaakov simlo tav. Vayasam sak bimatna. Vayitabel al beno yamim rabim. So he mourns for his son for many days. And his children try to comfort him. And he refuses to be comforted. I will be mourning till I die. And his father cries for him. And so that is the story. Now, if we look at the story, we try to figure out, what does Yosef know, and what do we know? And right, looking at the story, we realize we know a lot of things that Yosef doesn't know. Right? We know that Yaakov didn't know the brothers' plans. We know that the brothers' plans changed several times. We know that Reuven wasn't in on the plan. Right? We know that they trick Yosef, Yaakov, and make him think that Yosef is dead. And we know that Yaakov mourns the death of his son. Yosef knows none of that. All Yosef knows is his father sent him to Shechem to report back on his brothers. He gets to Shechem, and before he can do anything, right, he's taken, thrown into a pit, sold into slavery. That's all he knows. So Yol says, well, if we just look at this part of the story, Yosef would have a very good reason to believe that Yaakov was in on the plan, because he doesn't know that Yaakov isn't. He doesn't hear about the deceit. Right? He doesn't hear, and he says, he flips the question on his head. He said, the Ramban, the Abravanel, ask, how could Yosef not look for Yaakov when he's viceroy? Send a letter back to Canaan. But he said, but wait a second. Flip the question on your head. By time he's viceroy, he's been enslaved or in jail for a very long time. And he never got a letter from Yaakov. Meaning, again, the same reason it's not right. True, when he was a slave, he couldn't send back to Canaan. But Yaakov was a very wealthy businessman. He's capable of coming to Mitzrayim if he wants to. In fact, the brothers do. So if you're in Yosef's, if you're in Yosef's seat, right, what do you think is going on? So he said, well, if your brother sent, if your father sends you on a dangerous mission, and you get there, your brother sell you in slavery, and your father never bothers looking for you for all those many years, you might sit there and wonder, was, he said, he has different formulations. He said, now it could be, at the extreme, that he feels like Yaakov was in on it. Says, okay, but even if you don't like that he's in on it, so don't be in on it. But maybe he was persuaded. He said, right, he said, we have precedent for this in the Avot, right? Avram didn't want to send away Yishmael. He loved Yishmael. Sarah persuaded him, and God said, you know, Sarah's right, and he gets sent away. So he said, it could be he thinks his father was in on it, or it could be that he thinks his father wasn't in on it, but he got persuaded by the brothers. Or for all he knows, right, him being the talebearer wasn't just something that made the brothers not like him, maybe God didn't like it. And maybe he, like other members of the Avram family, is being rejected, and maybe Hashem told Yaakov, you know what, let go, right? He doesn't know. All he knows is that Yaakov sent him. He's in Mitzrayim. No one, there's no message. He doesn't know that Yaakov thinks he's dead. Right? All he knows is no one bothered looking for him. He was sold into slavery. So he suggests that maybe the reason that Yosef doesn't send back to Yaakov is because, right, really the question starts the other way. He was wondering why no one looked for him. And the answer that suggested itself to him was that his father, either willingly or unwillingly, had agreed to or been forced to agree to the rejection of Yosef from the family. And he has two other pieces of evidence, right? In addition to the negative evidence, right? Meaning, what does Yosef not know? He points to two other pieces of evidence. And if you turn later, right, Yosef, all the way later, he goes to Perek Mem. Where? Mem. Bet. Mem Aleph. Mem Aleph. Pasuk. Nun. So after he becomes the viceroy, so he gets married. Uli Yosef, Yulat, Shnei Vanim. Yosef has two children, Beterem Tevo Shnadara, before the famine. Asher Yodo Lo Asnat Bapoti Farah Kohenon. Right, that his wife, Asnat, gave birth to. Vaikra Yosef et Shema Bechor Minashe. He called the first one Minashe. Why? Kinashani Elohim et Kol Amali et Kol Beit Avi. God has made me forget my hardship and my father's household. Said, right, what does he name his first child? His first child is, thank God, Hashem has made me forget my father's house. Said, right, you look at the pasuk, it sounds like what he names his first son based on the assumption that he's been, right, that, you know, he's been rejected from his father's house, and thank God, finally, God has allowed him to forget all the travails that came from his father's house. So Raviolo points to this as piece of evidence number two, is that this doesn't sound like the type of person who assumes that his father still loves him and is waiting for him back there in Canaan and just doesn't know what happened to him. Right? What he's saying is, thank God that I've forgotten my father's house. Now, you could read it in other ways and say, I forgot, you know, the pain in my father's house caused by my brothers. Or we'll come back to Rav Meidan thinks in a minute of how to read this pasuk. But the simple read of the pasuk is simply, thank God that I've forgotten my father's house. His last piece of evidence is from the revelation of Yosef. And he said, Yosef cries three times during the story. Right? He cries when he hears the brothers starting to do tshuva. Right? When he starts to hear that they regret what happened, right? And that is in this is in Perek Membet, Pasuk Chof Aleph. right after they say, "Vayomru Isha Achiv Aval Eshemim Anachnu Alachinu Asher Einu Tzarat Nafsho Vidchananu Elena Veloshamanu Alkein Ba Elena Tzara." So, right, we're guilty for doing this. Because we saw him begging for his life and we didn't listen. Vayan Ruvein Otam Lemor Alo Amarti Alechem Lemor Al Techdu Vayeled. I told you not to sin. Velo Shematem Vegam Damo Inei Nidrash. You didn't listen. Now his blood is being, right, we're his blood is calling out to be avenged. Vehem Lo Yadu Ki Shomei Yosef Ki Amelitz Ben Otam Vayesov Melayem Vayev. So he turns away and he cries. So time number one that he cries, but he doesn't reveal himself, is when he hears the brothers beginning to regret what's going on, and he hears for the first time that any of his brothers were not in on it. Right? He hears that Reuven was not in on it. Right? So he cries, time one. Right? Second time he cries is after Binyamin comes down. the third time, right, which is the most important part for him, is when he actually reveals himself. So we skip all the way to the beginning of Parshas Vayigash. So Yehuda comes to him, and Yehuda begs him to take Yehuda in place of Binyamin. And he says, "Vayigash elav Yehuda, vayomer bi adoni yidaber na avdecha davar bezne adoni. Let me speak to you. Vayichar abcha b'avdecha ki chamocha kefaro." And now he tells him his story. Adoni shala davadav lemor. You asked us, "Hayish lachem avoach? Do you have a brother? Do you have a father?" Vaynomer al Adoni, and you said, and we said, "Yesh lanu avzakein." V'yelad zikonim katan v'achiv meid v'yvater hu levato limo v'aviv aivo. And we said we have an elderly father, and he has a he has one. We have one more brother, and he is the only one left to his mother. And you said, "Bring him down." He can't, because if he leaves, so then it'll kill our father. And say, "If you don't bring him, so then you won't be able to see me." And when we went back to our father and we told him what you said, and he said, "Go get some food." And we said, "We can't go down." We can't go down unless we have our youngest brother. And so he said, "Our father said to us, you know that my wife only had two children. And one of them is God, and he was eaten by a wild animal. And I haven't seen him until now." And you're going to take this one too, and something's going to happen to him, and then I'm going to go down, right, broken to my grave. And then if we skip down, right, so now, right, he continues his speech. And then in the beginning of Perek Mem, hey, v'lo yachol Yosef lehitapeg. Yosef couldn't hold himself back. V'chol anitzavim alav, v'ikrav, v'hotzilu kol ha'ish me'alayv l'manish, yitobit v'adai Yosef alachav, v'yitenet kolo b'vchi, and he starts crying, v'yishmu mitzrayim v'yishma beit paro, v'yomer Yosef alachav, and Yosef says to his brothers, ani Yosef, ha'od avichai, I am Yosef, is my father still alive? And so Rav Yoel points to this, and he says, well, what broke him? Right? He cried three times, but he broke here. He said, well, what broke him? And he said, if you follow carefully from the story, he learns one new piece of information that he didn't know until now. And that was that his father thought he was dead, and that he missed him, right? And that love he had for him, he asked for Binyamin, and that he'd been waiting for him, he just thought that he would never see him again. And he says, right, if this is true, that, right, you put all the pieces together, and Yosef thought that Yaakov, either willingly or unwillingly, had rejected him from the house, then the reason he finally breaks down at this part of the story is because he finds out that everything he thought was untrue. And at that point, he realized he hasn't been rejected. He said, right, he has this poetic thing, right, Yosef hears those words, and, you know, the chill runs down his spine. He doesn't hear the rest of Yosef's speech. And what is his response? Ani Yosef, right? What does he say? Ha'od avichai, is my father still alive? Which he said he reads to mean, is my father still alive? Meaning, this whole time I thought my father had rejected me, that he wasn't on the plan, or that he'd been convinced of it. And now I find out that he's there. Is it true? Is it really true that my father is still there? And once he gets past that, he realizes that he'd been living under a misconception. He breaks down and he's ready to begin the process of making up with his brothers and bringing his father down. And that's Rav Yoel's perspective on this story. Now, before we go to Rav Meidan's critique and the alternate perspective, right? If we follow some of the themes that we've talked about until now, right? This fits a distinct series of narratives in Sefer Bereishis, and we noted that starting with the stealing of the brachot story, starting with Yaakov, every significant member of the family goes through a period of time in which they feel unchosen, right? Yaakov is the unchosen one and has to steal the brachos. And Rachel and Leah, right, have the switching of the wives. So Leah feels she's the hated one, and Rachel loses her almost loses Yaakov, who she was supposed to be married to. Yosef, until now, has been the chosen one, and the brothers felt unchosen. But if this narrative is right, this story is the story of Yosef feeling that he's becoming the unchosen one. Now, the story culminates with him finding out that was untrue, but this would fit that narrative, those series of narratives of every person having to go through the experience of feeling like they're unchosen, and each person, when they sort of overcome that, that is their moment of greatness, right? When Yaakov finally, we talked about, finally realizes that he shouldn't have tricked Esav to get his status of chosen, right? Then we see a beginning of reconciliation, and we see Yaakov emerging as a stronger character, right? We talked about it a long time ago with the Rachel and Leah story, when Rachel and Leah begin to begin to make up and deal with their sort of that tension. And here with Yosef, when he finally realizes this, this is the opening for him to be able to say, don't worry, I understand that you, right, thought it for ill, but God thought it for good, and I'm going to forgive you, even though you did mean it for ill. In the end of the day, it was part of God's plan, and I'm willing to move past it. Right? So this would fit that series of narratives of somebody going through a period of feeling or being the unchosen one, and learning how to deal with that, and emerging from that experience when they realize they are chosen, having learned a lesson, right? Yaakov having learned a lesson from being in Laban's house, realizing what it's like to be unchosen. And here, Yosef, having been through the experience of being unchosen, and once he realizes that, in fact, he's still part of the family, he turns around and he's able to say to his brothers, despite the fact that you, rejected me. I'm not going to reject you. I'm going to forgive you. I'm going to look at the bigger picture. God put me here to support you, right? And he's going to emerge as that morally victorious character. So if Rabbi Yoel is right, right? So this story is another story in that narrative of people having to go through that experience of feeling unchosen, of believing they're unchosen, of understanding what it means to be in that situation, developing empathy, so that they can emerge as a better character when they end up being brought back into the chosen family. So that's perspective one on the story. And this was an article that Rabbi Yoel ben Nun had written in Megadim 1. In Megadim 2, Rabbi Yaakov Maidan wrote a critique of Rabbi Yoel ben Nun and presented an entirely different understanding of the narrative. And he, right, notes several potential problems with Rabbi Yoel's theory. So we'll go through a few of them. Well, you know, maybe I'll start by summarizing, and then we'll look at some of the evidence. He says no, right? He doesn't believe this for a second. He says Yosef must have known the entire time that his brothers were the one responsible, and that neither Yaakov nor God had rejected him. This story is very different. He says this story is not part of the chosenness, unchosenness narratives. It's part of the other set of narratives we have in Sefer Bereishis, which is the tshuva narratives, right? The narratives of sin and, right, repentance. And he has several pieces of evidence, right? I mean, first he lists all the evidence, right? He said, right, doesn't Yosef know that he's the beloved son, right? How could he think that suddenly he is rejected from the family? But he points to some other things. He says, first of all, he said, you think that Yosef thought that Yaakov had chosen the children of Leah over the children of Rachel. He said, wait a second. Come to the first time they come down to Egypt. Right? What happens? They come down to Egypt, he throws them all in jail and says, I'm going to send one brother back, bring your other brother, come down. Then he changes his mind, and he says, I'm going to keep one brother here, I'm going to keep Shimon here, and the rest of you are going to go back. Now, how long do they go back for? So the Pesukim say they went back for a year. So think about it from Yosef's perspective. If this narrative was right, right, that Yosef believed that he'd been rejected, that the children of Rachel had been rejected in favor of the children of Leah, that they had overcome Yaakov and convinced him that, you know, Yosef was a tattletale, was causing problems with the family, it's us or him, right? Make your choice, and he'd been persuaded. Didn't he realize that Yaakov left Shimon in jail for a year rather than send Binyamin? I mean, even if he didn't notice it earlier in the story, right? He had a whole year to realize, right? Again, it's only a few days' trip. Didn't he realize that apparently Yaakov was protecting Binyamin at the expense of Shimon? Did he really think that he'd given up on the children of Rachel? And he says, furthermore, Rav Yoel focuses only on the final time that Yosef cries when we learn that Yaakov thought that Yosef was dead. But as we said, there are three times that he cries. What? Okay, I've had this sore throat. What?
Tea?
Sure.
Yeah.
Thanks.
It's hurting me.
No. Yeah, just this cold weather is like, whenever the weather like gets this cold, yeah,
it's hurting me to listen to you.
Right. So the right, but we noted that Yosef cries three times. So Rav Yoel explains only the third crying, and he says that something happens in the third crying that's unique. But he says if you actually go to all three times that he cries. So as we noted, the first time that Yosef cries, there's no mention of Yaakov whatsoever. He cries specifically because it's the first time that he hears that Reuven hadn't been in on it, one, and two, that the brothers say, "Aval ashemim anachnu," right, that we are guilty. Right, the second time he cries When Binyamin comes down, right, he just cries because, right, he sees Binyamin, right, that's, right, understandable. And the third time that he cries, he said, Rav Yoel focuses on one pasuk and says the reason he cries is because he hears that Yaakov still loves Binyamin and still loves Yosef and thought he was dead. But he said, there's something else happening, right? That's two psukim in this whole big story. But what's the main thrust of the beginning of Parshas Vayigash? Right, who's saying this story? Thank you. Right, who's saying this story? Yehuda. Right, Yehuda, who was the instigator of the original sale, is suddenly sticking up for Binyamin, right, the other child of Rachel. And he said, it's more than that. Look at the psukim. Right, if this story is a tshuva narrative, right, there's a good reason that he'd break down in Vayigash, because not only does Yaakov stand up, or does Yehuda stand up for Binyamin, he said, listen to what Yehuda tells him, right? If we look back at it, in Pasuk Chav Zayin, Vayomer Avdecha Avielenu, your father had said to us, Atem Yidatem Kishnayim Yoldala Ishti, right? You know that my wife only gave birth to two children. He said, wait a second, Yehuda is willing to risk his life for Binyamin, even as he articulates that after so many years, Yaakov still thinks that Rachel is his wife and that he has two children, right? One of his other children from another wife is willing to verbalize, right? My father said, I have a wife who had two children. And despite the fact that Yehuda is fully aware of what he's saying, right, that he is the child of the less loved wife, to the point where his father considers himself to really have one primary wife and two primary children, right, Yehuda, in that moment of pain, right, how painful could that be for Yehuda to admit that, Yehuda still puts his life on the line and says, for my father's sake, take me and send Binyamin back. He said, if you were Yosef, and Yehuda had sold, had instigated the sale of Yosef because he was jealous of the favoritism, and now, despite the fact that he's not hiding from the favoritism, he's admitting that that hasn't changed, that apparently Yaakov is still in that mindset, that Rachel is his main wife. He's still at the point where Binyamin and Yosef are his main children. He's still putting his life on the line and willing to sacrifice himself to send Binyamin home. And then in Lamed Bet, right, he continues and he says, why? Ki avdecha arav et hanar meim avi. I took responsibility to tell him, le'morim lo avi enu elecha v'chatati l'avi kol yamim, that if I don't bring him back to you, I will have sinned for my entire, for eternity. In Lamed Dalet, ki eichel el aviv anar en enu iti, I can't go back without him. Then below Yachol Yosef lehitapek lechol anisavim alav. Then Yosef breaks down. So Rav Meidan argues that this is not a narrative of Yosef thinking that his father had rejected him and then learning his father hadn't rejected him. He said, first of all, why should he think his father rejected him? And he said, that which Rav Yoel said, that he should have expected Yaakov to send a letter, try to find him. He said, Egypt was the biggest country in the, was the most powerful country in the world. Try finding a slave in the slave market in Mitzrayim, right? And remember, he said, from his perspective, he had good reason to believe that Yaakov wasn't in on it. For, you know, for example, right, if Yaakov was in on it, so you would expect that he would have been sold in the place that Yaakov sent him to, but he wasn't. Right? He knew that Yaakov sent him to Shechem. His brothers weren't in Shechem, they were in Dothan. Right, so Yaakov didn't even know where he was. Right, why would he have thought Yaakov was in it? Yaakov didn't know where he was, and why would Yaakov have thought he was sold? Right, where would he have come up with that idea? Right, and furthermore, the psukim emphasized that he sold three times, right, amongst different merchants, and eventually ends up in Egypt. He's like, how do you expect true? He knew that his father was still in Canaan and that he was only in Egypt, but There's so many steps that have happened by the time Yosef gets to Egypt. How is his father supposed to know that he's there? So he said, it can't be. And he said, right, it must be that Yosef realized that Yaakov still loved him. What he was waiting for wasn't to find out that, was to find out, right, that his brothers had done tshuva. And he says, and this is how he understands the Ramban, right, not simply that the goal of Yosef was to make sure that his dreams were fulfilled. Right? Part of having his dreams fulfilled was having them bring Binyamin down and do tshuva. Right? He notes, right, in the nevuah, in the dreams of Yosef, it's not just that there are 11 people. Right? The brothers are the stars. Right? There's a feeling that all the brothers are still part of the family. If they never do tshuva, right, then if anyone's going to be rejected from the story, who's it going to be? It's not going to be Yosef, it's going to be them. Right? He says, what does the Ramban mean when he said he's waiting for his dreams to be fulfilled? Not that his brothers should come down and bow to him, but that his brothers should come down and bow to him, but still be the stars. Right? He has a vision in which all the brothers are these celestial beings, and that he doesn't see when he sees his brothers as the criminal, right, criminals who sold their brother to slavery. But once he sees and puts them through this process where they're forced to bring Binyamin down and sacrifice for Binyamin and fix the jealousy that they had towards Yosef, and this time instead of selling Yosef, instead of selling off Binyamin, which is what they could do now, they put their lives on the line to save Binyamin. He is trying to bring the moment of tshuva where they, right, they don't just come and bow to him, but they come and bow, and they are, so to speak, still the stars. And he said, right, there's other evidence in the story. For example, right, smack in the middle of the Yosef story, there's a chapter which doesn't seem to belong, which is the story of Yehuda and Tamar. Yehuda and Tamar is, without getting into the details, clearly a story of the tshuva of Yehuda. Right? If you, the framing, and that seems to be the turning point in the story, right? That after that story, everything begins, right? The brothers start to take responsibility, and Yehuda emerges as a leader, right? The story is framed, in many ways, as a tshuva story of the brothers, and especially of Yehuda. So he argues, right, that against Reveal, that this is not part of the chosenness, unchosenness narratives. This is the part of the tshuva narratives in Bereishis. And that what really motivates Yosef is to create a situation in which he tests or brings his brothers to the state where they can do tshuva, where they can take responsibility for Binyamin, so that they can fix that flaw within themselves, so that when they do come down, they will remain part of the Shvatim. So Ramadan pushes back very, very strongly on Rav Yoel and his read of the story. So what you come out with is two, right, radically different reads of what the Yosef story is about and which narrative, right, or series of narratives in Bereishis is it a part of. Now, at some level, they might both be true, but which one is it primarily? So Rav Yoel thinks that, right, this story is about Yosef not knowing that that he hasn't been rejected by his father, that he hasn't been rejected by God, and him dealing with that experience for years. And then when he finally learns that it's not true, he uses that ability to empathize, to, instead of taking revenge on his brothers, to realize that God's plan is that he should take care of his brothers, and that he shouldn't take revenge on them. And therefore this story is part of that chosenness, unchosenness narrative, which, as we've talked about, seems to be an attempt to develop the empathy of the characters who go through that experience. And that would be one way of reading the Yosef narrative. The other way is to frame it not within that narrative, but in the ones of tshuva, and to say what really breaks Yosef is not that he thought his father rejected him. He didn't. He understood that his father loved him and that it was the brothers. What broke him down was, after three times of crying, was the first time seeing that Reuven wasn't part of it, seeing that his brothers had begun to regret it, and then coming to a peak in Vayigash, where Yehuda despite the fact that he still recognizes that the children of Rachel are the favored ones, he puts his life on the line, he commits to his father, and he puts his money where his mouth is and actually offers himself as a slave, and instead of selling Yosef as a slave because he's the unchosen one, he's willing to sell himself as a slave rather than sell the children of the child of Rachel, or let him remain as a slave in Egypt. And that's really the role of this narrative in Bereishis. So those are sort of just two very, very different perspectives on the Yosef story. You know, largely, and again, right, these go back to a lot of the themes we've been talking about throughout Sefer Bereishis, right, these themes of tshuva on the one hand, or the themes of chosenness, unchosenness, and how do you deal with being unchosen. And right, how you understand this perspective will, in many ways, affect how you understand the continuation of it. Right, when we get to Vayechi, and Yaakov has his final moments with his sons, right, and Yaakov breaks down when Yosef agrees to bury him in Canaan against the will of the Egyptians, right? If you read this as the story of chosenness, unchosenness, right, that in many ways is the culmination of this story, because it shows that, right, even though Yosef may have at some point thought that Yaakov had given up on him, even when faced with the question, are you going to be committed to Yaakov, who's your father, or to Paro, who took you in when you thought your father had rejected you, right? When their desires are against each other, who are you going to listen to? And he listens to Yaakov. That's sort of the culmination, right? That he's willing to listen to Yaakov over Paro, even though Paro had taken him in when he thought that Yaakov had rejected him. If it's the tshuva narrative, right, in many ways, the Vayechi is also sort of a tragic ending, because you realize the brothers have done tshuva, Yosef has accepted the tshuva, but Yosef has never successfully fully convinced the brothers that he's accepted their tshuva, because even there, once Yaakov dies, they still come back to him and say, your father commanded us, don't kill us, don't take revenge, right? And you see that the sort of the tragic end to the story is that it may be a tshuva story where Yosef legitimately forgives them, but the brothers don't seem to ever be able to forgive themselves, right, and consistently think that Yosef hasn't forgiven them. And, you know, we tend to think that it's a happily ever after story, but it's really not, right? Yosef remains in the palace, and his brothers remain in Goshen. It doesn't sound like, reading Parshas Vayechi, as if they had too much interaction, right? They come to him only after Yaakov dies to say, oh, don't take revenge, right? It doesn't sound like they, you know, had Friday night dinner together every week, right? It sounds like even though he was taking care of them, right, and he did accept their tshuva, right, at some level, right, there is a failure of on their part to realize that he's accepted the tshuva and themselves to forgive themselves and bring him back in the family. But you know, what you think happened in those years and what the focus was and what Yosef thought is necessary to try to figure out what it is at the culmination of Sefer Bereishis is happening, the relationship between Yosef and his brothers and Yosef and his father.